So welcome again to everyone on Zoom, everyone on Facebook Live, everyone in the US, in Israel and Palestine, other places in the world. This is the latest installment of the Conversations with Israel and Palestine webinar series. It's a series that brings voices from Israel and Palestine to an American and international audience and provides an important link between progressives in the Middle East and those in the US and elsewhere around the world. My name is Ron Skolnick. I organize these webinars on behalf of Partners for Progressive Israel. Before I hand it over to today's discussion moderator, I have a few housekeeping notes. So first, to introduce Partners for Progressive Israel. Partners is an American not-for-profit that's dedicated to the achievement of a durable and just peace between Israel and its neighbors, and that includes an end to Israel's occupation based on a two-state solution. Partners supports Israelis working to ensure justice, civil rights, and equality for all of Israel's inhabitants. The organization cultivates Jewish-Arab partnerships and seeks to deepen Americans' understanding of Israel's and Palestine's complexities so that they can better advocate for a progressive shared future. Partners is glad to be bringing this webinar to you for free. And if you like it and want more programming like this, please visit progressiveisrael.org. And if you can, please make a contribution. A couple of programming notes. This Sunday, Partners for Progressive Israel is continuing its annual Israel-Palestine Symposium once again this year via Zoom. This Sunday's sessions include meetings with Bassam Aramim and Roby Damelin of the Parent Circle, with representatives of Combatants for Peace, conversations with Palestinians living under occupation in Gaza and the West Bank, and Israelis representing Machson Watch and the Way to Healing, who deal with human rights abuse. I'll drop the link in the chat so you can sign up for that. Also, a week from tomorrow, Thursday, August 26th, Partners will be hosting a Zoom discussion with Menachem Daum, director of the film The Ruins of Lifta, along with Professor Daphna Golan of the Save Lifta Coalition. And again, I'll drop the link in the chat for sign up for both the film and the discussion. So now let me introduce our panelists and moderator today so that we can get into the teeth of the discussion. Iman Qasem Sliman is a radio journalist who produces and moderates programs on political and social affairs with a focus on the Arab minority in Israel, as well as on women's rights. Ms. Qasem is active in projects involving Arab-Jewish coexistence, as well as the integration of Arab young people in higher education and the labor market. Our second panelist is Idan Ring, who is co-director of Sikui's Department for a Shared Society, and he also leads Sikui's program for promoting the representation of Arab citizens and Arab society in mainstream media. Idan is the former director of Sikui's Public Affairs Department and also served as Sikui's spokesman. He teaches communications and social change at Ben-Gurion University and is a regular writer for Avapeds in places such as Haaretz and the Seventh Eye. Last but not least, our moderator today is Dr. Anwar Mahajne. She is an assistant professor at Stonehill College, a political scientist specializing in international relations and comparative politics with a focus on gender, religion, and Middle Eastern politics. Her work has been featured in a very long list of publications, including the International Feminist Journal of Politics, Political Research Quarterly, Foreign Policy, The Times of Israel, Haaretz, The Middle East Eye, 972, and I could go on. But I won't, because I want to hand it over things now to Anwar, and I'll rejoin you at the end of the broadcast to close things up. Have a wonderful discussion.
Thank you so much. As Ron noted, I'll be serving as the discussion moderator for the next 60 minutes. So just a few things. The first 40 minutes, I'll be having a conversation with the speakers, or mainly just asking them questions and listening to their insights. Then after that, we'll have 20 minutes for Q&A. You guys can post any questions at any moment. If you click on the Q&A icon at the bottom of the screen, sometimes you might have to kind of move your mouse a little bit to see it. I won't be responding to questions in the chat. I will only be responding to questions in the Q&A, or paying attention to the questions in the Q&A. Your cameras and mics are going to be turned off. So the only way for you to communicate your question is through the Q&A feature. So let's get started. I want to thank our speakers for being here with me. I'm very excited to finally meet you in person. I see you both on Twitter and we've chatted a little bit over Twitter, but it's good to see you face to face, even if it's virtual. I have a few questions for you, considering your experience and expertise. I think it's good to start the discussion by highlighting, why is this discussion important? Why is it important for us to talk about marginal or even the lack of representation of the Palestinian minority in Israel in mainstream media, Israeli media? And how does that interact with the sociopolitical and economic context that shapes the community's lives in Israel? I think, any of you could start, but if you want me to make it easier, I can start with, Eidan, do you want to go first? I see that you unmuted yourself.
Yeah, I'll be glad to. Well, thanks, Anwar, and thank you, Ron, and Partners for Progressive Israel for this important webinar. I'll just say, first of all, like in every a democratic country and society, mainstream media has a very important role, because through media, actually, we learn about reality and we learn about the place we live in. And in Israel, when it comes to majority and minority relations and Arab-Jewish-Arab relations, it's even more important. It has a bigger role. And this is because, although, you know, with social media and everything, we still learn about our reality through what we see on television, what we read in the newspapers. And the reality today is that although we have a lot of economical, financial changes and things are really, we'll be talking about it, I'm sure, but still two very fundamental things haven't really changed. And that is that Jews and Arabs, mostly they live apart, okay? They live in their own cities, or even if you go to mixed cities, you will see neighborhoods of Jewish, more Jewish people, neighborhoods of more Arab people, and also children and most families, they go to separate schools. Okay, so we still live in a largely segregated reality until the age of, let's say, 20, 20 something. Okay, most people, they grow up without really having friends who are not their own religion or not within their own in-group, let's say. And then the things we learn about if the Jewish majority, what they know about the Arab minority, usually is through what they read in the newspaper or what they hear on TV, okay? And maybe you could say the same about the minority, the Arab minority, but it's different because there's no symmetry, you know? There's a lot of differences. And that's why the media still has a very important role in portraying how the other group looks and thinks, and it really affects the way people think about the other group and what they know about the other group how they stand in, you know, about relations. Okay, and when you go and you see how the Arab minority is portrayed for many years in Israeli media, you understand that the majority is receiving a very distorted, one-sided view of this Arab minority. It has nothing to do with day-to-day reality and in the things they do and they think, okay, or even about their share in society, okay? If we see researches and we in Sikui, we monitor the data, for many years, the percentage of Arab speakers on Israeli mainstream media was around 2 to 3%, okay? And the reality is that today, Arab citizens are 20% of Israeli population. So even in this small figure, you can see that if a child is growing up, or if somebody who lives only in a Jewish city, and a lot of cities have only Jewish populations, and they don't have day-to-day contact with Arab citizens outside of, you know, shopping malls and things like that. So they live in some kind of feeling that Arab citizens are a very small portion of Israeli society, although they are the major, most important minority group in Israel. So this is like to get started on this issue, why the portrayal in mainstream media is like this kind of window of how the other group really looks and its place in society. I'll give Iman.
Okay, I will. I will start from this point. First, I would like to say that what Dan and Sikui are doing is a very important thing. Thanks to you, Dan, we see a change today. It's not like it was some years ago. And it's not just bringing the Arab citizens to the media in order just to see them. It's a part of a whole project of integration and of knowing the other person who's living in another village in Israel. So it's not only in the fact that they are in the media. From the point that you put the Arab citizens in the media, in the mainstream Israeli Hebrew media, then they also become a part of the whole picture, and the Jews they start to know the Arabs in a different way. Then it breaks the stereotypes. It's not only seeing the Arab that is an enemy, it's listening to him, hearing what he has to do. And there are different kinds of integration and of presenting the Arabs in the Hebrew or Israeli mainstream media. First, as guests, when you bring an Arab to interview him. Years ago, they never used to bring Arabs unless it is Knesset members, as I remember, and very few others. We only saw the Knesset members and the politicians in the Israeli mainstream Hebrew media. Now things changed, especially and thanks to the corona. There is one good thing that this COVID-19 caused, that in the Israeli media, we saw also doctors, we saw many people from the finance, from the health system in Israel. So the Jews started seeing the Israeli Arab as something different than only the politician. So this is as guests, that they bring someone to talk about things different from not only politics. Then we go another one step forward, which is Arabs in the Israeli media as workers, as reporters. And usually it is the Arab journalist who reports and talks about the Arab society. This is good and this is great, because an Arab journalist who lives in Umm al-Fahim, for example, will be able to talk about the Arab society, I think, more than someone who lives very far and doesn't feel the everyday life of Arab citizens. So we saw that we have more Arabs in the Israeli media, but not that much. And you know, Edan, you are fighting all the time to bring more. And then we have another step forward, which is an Arab journalist who works in the Israeli Hebrew mainstream media, not talking only about the Arabs, the Arab society, talking about everything, having a program that deals with everything that's going on in Israel, with Arabs and Jews. And this is actually what I am doing. My programs in Kan, Reshet Beit, don't deal only with the Arab citizens, except the Tokhnit, the program Marhabet. But mainly my own program is Kan Halayla, which deals with everything. Even I interview Jews about Jewish feasts and occasions and what's happening inside the Israeli society. And I think that this is the model that we want to reach, that we feel the Arabs are a part of the life in Israel in all means, not only knowing what happens in the Arab society, the way that we want the Jews to know what's happening in the Arab society, not only in the Jewish society. And this is important for much more than only the media. This is talking about coexistence. It's talking about building together a life for everyone here. We are partners. And we saw how during these 1 year and a half of the COVID-19, the corona, how the health system worked only when Arabs and Jews did it together. We saw how the doctors, the nurses, everyone, they worked so well and so beautiful together. This is the model that we need. We live here together in everything. We share everything. We have the same problems, the same challenges that we must do together. So really, thank you, Dan, for what you are doing. This is a very important step, and we will see the impact of it also in the future, I hope.
Well, thank you, Iman. Yeah, thank you. First of all, thank you, Iman, because I think you're a very important voice in mainstream media and for all of the public, not only Jewish, for Jewish and Arabs alike, when they open the radio at the end of the day and they hear a professional Arab commentator and also Arab woman commentator, I must add, talking about all of the issues that concerns us, all of the things that are in the news. This is a very important message because they understand that every citizen is allowed to be whatever he wants to be in, and that the Arab public can have its own place around, like the campfire of the Israeli mainstream, you could say. And I think this is a very important point because for many years, when Arabs were interviewed or when Arabs were brought either as guests or as speakers or as journalists, they always had like their designated spot. They could only talk about one specific thing. It's similar to what happened for many years with women in Israeli media, and I think also in a lot of mainstream media in other places. Women were invited to speak about, like, you know, feminine issues or about family issues, okay, or about cultural issues. But if you wanted to talk about security or about politics or about international relations, then we need to talk to a man. And we were so happy to see this is rapidly changing. Okay, today in Israeli media, you could see women talking about almost everything. And we wish it would be like this also with Arab journalists and speakers and experts. Okay, we don't want them only to be invited to speak about Arab society or about the conflict or about terror. Okay, because the problem is that media, it's not doing a favor to Arab citizens when it invites them or when it gives them a more equal place around the discussion table. Okay, it's part of its role, its professional role, to portray society as it really is in reality. And our problem in Israel is that although we have many conflicts and problems, and just a few months ago we went through a very hard time in Jewish Arab relations and in the conflict, but on the other hand we also have a lot of progress on the ground, okay, building a shared society, like Iman said. Okay, this phenomena of Jews and Arabs working together in the health sector, in hospitals, it's not something new. It didn't happen yesterday with the COVID. Okay, it's something that has been growing for years, and we can see it in many other fields also. We can see it in academia, people like you, Anwar, you know, in Israel also, a lot of Arab experts and researchers, but the media is slow to catch up with reality. Okay, reality is going forward faster than media. Media tends to think about, to portray things like people think they should be portrayed and not go before them. You know, they're usually a bit scared to rock the boat and show things that are, you know, a bit innovative, a bit different than what people are used to. And now we see slowly how media is also catching up. And in the last, I'm happy to say that in the last 18 months, a percentage of Arab speakers is really going up. It almost doubled itself in the last few years. And also we can see that because of COVID and because of other issues, we see more and more speakers and experts from the Arab society who are invited to speak not only about political Jewish Arab issues or local Arab sector issues. They are being invited also to speak about things like health or things like society, and also issues like the crisis with the crime and murder in Arab society is being treated as a problem. It's not only the Arab sector's problem; it's a national problem, and it should be treated like this, because the media has to do its role not only for Jews. It's not the mainstream media. Is not only the Jew citizens media. Okay, it's supposed to be all of the citizens media. Okay, and if you have this kind of crisis, for example, then it should be treated like this.
I would like also to add another point that I feel frustrated because not only all the Jews know Arabic. I always said I would like to see that the Jewish society are learning Arabic from Arabic language from the first grade at school. So what happens now that the ministers, all the people who really can affect on the policy here in Israel, they don't speak Arabic. So they cannot hear the Arab citizens, whether they are politicians or in any other field, education, local things, they cannot hear them in the Arab media. When they come to the Hebrew media in Hebrew and they speak in Hebrew, so the people who must do the job in the end, which is the government, the ministers, and Knesset members, not the Arabs, I mean all of them, when they see the Arab citizen talking in the media in Hebrew, then this can affect more on them, so that they will have to work on the issues that are talking about in the studios, whether it is education or environment or any other thing. So, and I can see this, like when I interview, I can interview someone in Arabic in my Arabic shows. Okay, and the Arabs listen and it can make some effect. But when I interview an Arab in the Hebrew show, it has larger effect. Why? Because everyone can listen, and everyone, especially when I mean everyone, the people who can really, who are responsible of the policy in Israel, then they can hear and they can change things here in Israel.
Thank you, guys. I feel like we can take a lot of time discussing this issue. So I have a few things to kind of comment on and then ask a question. I thought it was interesting that you guys said it's important not only to include Arabs to talk about Arab issues, but also to talk about general issues, like Arab experts who can talk about a lot of things. And I think it's funny because it reminded me of how every time I meet a Jewish Israeli at a conference and they know I'm from Umm al-Fahim, they know I'm an Arab woman, it's like they saw a unicorn, you know, like, what? That's a thing. So it's always, you know, I laugh, but it's sad in a lot of ways. And I think it's also, both their presentation is important for the Jewish community to see the other side. And I think Arabs can, since a lot of them speak Hebrew and work in Tel Aviv, work with Jewish colleagues, is that it's easier for them to see that narrative, but it's harder for the Jewish community to understand the Arab community without knowing Arabic, right? And looking at Arabic media. And then the other thing I think is it's important to have, you know, Arab role models for kids to see, and see that actually you can reach these places, like Mohammed Majadli, right? Everyone was proud of him. Ibn Muthallath, he's from the Triangle area. So everyone was proud of his appointment. And then the question is, I have Eidan for you, is Sikui also kind of monitoring what type of people are being included? So yes, we have more representation of the minority. Now, who are we including from the minority? Women, men, you know, kind of location as well. Are they from mixed city? Let's say, are they interviewing someone from Umm al-Fahim or someone from Haifa? So I was wondering if you're keeping track of these
Yes, we publish every quarter the representation index that has been going on for more than 5 years now. It's a joint project of Sikui together with the Seventh Eye a website and the media organization. And the idea is really to measure not only the amount and share of Arab presence on these mainstream programs and radio and television channels, but also to try and understand how and on which issues and roles they are portrayed. And one of the things we do is we really try to measure also if they are being invited as experts, okay? Mm-hmm. Are they talking about their field of expertise, or are they just talking about some, you know, current issues that have to do with them being Arab and representing Arab society and the Arab sector? And that's why we try and see if they are all also experts, because we have in Israel a lot of, because, you know, like I said, Arab citizens are 20% of the population. So you can find Arab experts in many, many fields, and especially that, Arab culture and society really pushes for excellence. And you can see, if you go to universities, you go to the Technion, you go to Ben Gurion, you know, Iman will tell us about her two sons, I'm sure, in a few seconds. You can see a lot of Arab students, really. Arab students in many fields, and also Arab workers in the high tech field have really boomed in the last few years. Because, and also Israeli government acknowledges this. We can see that the Ministry of Finance and the government, they all are really investing in making Arab public go to universities and be more involved in the work market, because there's a lot of potential, and from that potential also they can be a lot of very interesting speakers and experts that can enter everybody's living room through these news programs and talk about everything, you know, from culture to environment to society to finance, etc. And I think so this is something we try to measure, and still I think the numbers are a bit low, around like 20%, 30% of speakers speak about their expertise and about diverse fields, and the rest are still speaking mainly about Arab society. And the other problem, like you said, is the presence of women, Arab women speakers, that is still very, very low, because when you talk about Arab interviewees and speakers in the media, they suffer double discrimination, because we have a general problem of women being discriminated in the media. Okay, when you look also only at the whole population or only at the Jewish population, you see that TV and radio shows much more, airs much more women interviewees and not men. But Arab women have a double problem, because they are also being excluded as Arabs and excluded as women. So we are really trying to put a focus on bringing more women to our mainstream media programs. And one of the things we do, that we have this expert list called A-List, and it's a website. It's like a big database of Arab experts. Everybody can go and look for it. It's called a-list.org.il. And this is like a database that news editors and the people working in the media, they can go there and they can find people from the Arab public that are experts in every field they need. I think it's a valuable tool, because it's not enough to monitor media and to make it, you know, and to apply pressure. You also need to help them, because the problem with the Israeli Hebrew media, like Iman said, is that most people working there are Jewish, and they don't have connections in the Arab society. They don't, you know, when we started the project and we showed the very low percentage of Arab interviewees, we started to receive phone calls from all these programs saying, we want to improve, but we don't know how to reach these people. Please help us reach them. So one of the things we did, we established this database, giving them information and contacts to reach these people.
I would like to add something. The fact that I'm working at Cannes, especially Cannes Reshet Bet, I'm helping a lot to bring new people to be interviewed from different domains like environment, education, social affairs, not only politics, but we have two problems, Dan. I hope that you agree with me. First, to be interviewed in the Hebrew media, you must know Hebrew, but not only, you must know very good Hebrew to be able to talk and to express yourself. And sometimes I know excellent experts, but they cannot express themselves in Hebrew language. So sometimes I think we must work on ourselves. And this is true also when we say media, we also mean the websites. And I always tell academics, please write things for the website like Tour de A, any article. Some of them really do and they write, but some of them, you know, they don't have this ability to write in Hebrew something that will really be interesting. So first, the Hebrew language. And I think it's good to encourage Arabs also to work on their Hebrew language in order to be good enough to be interviewed in the Hebrew media. And second, sometimes I feel that Arabs like feel afraid of the Israeli media, that they might attack them, that if in one panel there are also Jews from the right wing or people who don't really like Arabs, they can be very, attacking and using hard words. So some Arabs say, leave me alone. I don't want to go into this. Sometimes it is very aggressive. I know that, yes, sometimes it is very aggressive, but if no one is willing to do this, so we will not be able to change. The problem is that the talk in Israel, the siyach, the conversation in Israel, in the last month, I don't know, I cannot measure exactly for how long, but it became very aggressive. It's not only in the street and not only in the Knesset, also in the media, on the Facebook and on the media. And sometimes people say, I don't want to go into this. Leave me alone. I do my job. I'm working in high tech. I'm working in the academia or anywhere. I don't want to be part of this aggressive conversation.
Yes, there are many barriers to bringing more Arab interviewees and speakers to the media mainstream. Some of them are on the program side of the journalist side, inviting more Arabs, giving them room, asking them questions that are relevant. But some of them are also on the Arab interviewee side, you know, self-censorship sometimes, you know, and sometimes they don't feel they have anything to gain from going to Israeli mainstream media in Hebrew, okay, only to lose, because for many, many years, Iman is right. The environment for Arab speakers was very hostile. And when we have conflict peaks, you know, when we have times of more conflict and security issues, you can see that environment becomes even more conflict, more hostile towards Arab speakers. And then naturally, many of them say, I don't need this. Why do I need to come to go on this program and to be attacked? And I have to, usually a thing that happens a lot when a news program invites an Arab speaker and they start to ask him questions about like the whole Arab public or you know, if some politicians said something in the morning, some Arab politicians, and they will invite this. I saw this happening during my conflicts and riots. This professor from the University of Haifa was invited to talk about the situation in mixed cities. And in the morning, you know, this politician said something about the attacks, and they started to question him, saying, "Why don't you say anything about what the politician said? And why did he say that? And what do you think about that?" Although they have no connection, you know, he's Arabic, you're Arabic, so say something, you know. And it's very hard for Arab experts to come on air like this.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point to make, though I do think that we need to hold the news outlet that is hosting responsible for creating an environment that is hostile, right? If you create rules for the discussion and give enough time for everyone, then that could maybe help mitigate the thing. But these outlets prosper on conflict and having like the visual argument happen, but that doesn't foster real dialogue, right, that is needed. Actually, we don't have a lot of time, so I'm gonna move on to the next question. And I see one of the questions that I wanted to ask, I see that somebody asked it in the Q&A, so I'm gonna leave it and then maybe use their question to ask you. But before I go to the Q&A, I wanted to ask you one thing. What do you think is causing, why do you think the Israeli media is marginalizing them and then marginalizing Palestinian voices in Israel? I know that now you're saying there is an improvement, that the number the numbers are increasing. So what do you think caused the change? And then how can we foster the change and make it more permanent, sustainable, right? And it's not only this period and then we're done. Any one of you can start.
Idan, because they're really leading this thing, you know, they're doing so, they have all the numbers and how it really changed along the years. Idan.
Well, I think one of the main reasons that Arab voices were being marginalized, it's a bit like, it has to do with reasons that minorities were marginalized for many years. About, you know, about power relations inside society. And media is not a democratic organization. You know, media is usually led by the elites, and usually it has a small a group of people that give the orders and that actually decide what the portrayal will be and who will be invited. And in Israel also, we have another thing that media for many years has been attacked by populist leaders and by the right wing and by politicians for being unpatriotic, for being leftist. And for many years, we saw that news programs were self-censoring themselves, and they were afraid to bring more Arab speakers because their critics on the right or in the streets will say that they are unpatriotic. Why are they giving more space and room for Arab speakers and not for Jewish speakers? So I think that and this has to do also with the financial crisis that is going on with the publicity crisis in media. The media is very, very sensitive to ratings, and for many years, directors and editors in the media, they were afraid that if they give more room and space for Arab voices, maybe it will hurt them with ratings also, and maybe they will lose money with companies that want to publish and buy media on their channels. So these are some of the reasons that they were very hesitant actually to give more room and to look at what's really happening outside. Okay, like Iman said, the change is happening because reality is changing. Okay, and media is slow and it's finally starting to catch up with reality in the Israeli public sphere, in Israeli economy, in Israeli hospitals, in Israeli politics also. Okay, the big change in the last 6 months happened because Israeli government and Knesset has more Arab MKs and even has an Arab coalition party, and this was the big change. Okay, we have Mohammad Mejadla, who is now a commentator, a full-time commentator for the first time. Okay, we have a news commentator in Channel 12 News, which is the most popular, you know, most popular news channel and news program. And this happened only after an Arab party went into the coalition. It's like they understood that they cannot talk about Arabs in the coalition without having an Arab participant in the panel, in discussion. So I think these are some of the reasons that stopped it from happening until now.
And Iman, do you have something to add to this?
No, I think that Dan really analyzed it very excellent. And it's exactly this thing that what happens in the everyday life, we can see the reflection of it in the media. So when we see, for example, Arab football players in the main Israeli football team, so then we see more Arabs in the media from this side. So they are there. I think once there were six Arab football
players. Almost half of the team, the national team.
Almost half of the team. So this happened in the football before it happened in the media. So now the media can see that the Arabs are there. And so they started to talk more about all the Arab football players. Now we hope that, for example, in sports, I really hope that there will be Arabs in the Israel delegation to the Olympic Games, because there was no Arab in this delegation that was in Tokyo. So if there will be Arabs in the sports, more in the sports, then we will see more Arabs also in the media talking about sports, because we have sport experts, but things should happen in all platforms, in the real life and in the media all together.
And I just want to answer your second question in a really short answer. You ask, what should we do so it could stay like this way and keep on improving? And I have one short answer. We need more Iman El-Kassim. Okay. No, but I'm totally serious. If every channel in Israel would have two or three presenters and journalists and commentators like Khan Bet has Iman, then we will see this situation keeps improving, okay? Because they make the decisions. The problem is still today that people that make the decisions and people that actually are the ones who decide how the lineup will look or how the newspaper will look, most of them are still Jews sitting in Tel Aviv, okay? And most of them don't really know or understand Arab society. And we need diversity also in the newsroom, not only in the discussion or in the report, also diversity in the newsroom. And this is a big change that we still have to make here in Israel.
Thank you, Idan. Thank you, Idan.
I think I want to start with the Q&A. I just want to remind the participants that you can always write your question even now. I do have three questions so far. One of them, I think it would be a good kind of segue to what I wanted to ask you, because now I feel like we've focused mainly on news media, on panels, like discussing topics that are happening in the news. But the question here, actually, I want to read it. Many of these problems are the same as those faced in American mainstream media by people of color and women. Can the panelists also discuss the use of language in creating attitudes? Also, how do they see portrayals of Palestinians in TV and movies? So I think it's also interesting to talk about TV, movies, and also language, right? I feel like the first time a Jewish guy tried to talk to me in a friendly way, you know, was like, stop or I'm going to shoot. And it's like a compliment, you know, because he learned that in the army. And that's the first thing that he wanted to say to me in Arabic. So language, of course, is important, right? How we learn it, what we learn it, like, show me your ID or waqfala batukhak. I feel like these are the first expressions they learn in Arabic, right?
The problem is that a lot of Israelis, the only Arab language they know, although, you know, Arabic for many of Jewish Israelis, Arabic is also our mother tongue, you know, the language of our grandfathers. You know, almost half of Jewish population comes from Arab speaking communities. But still, most of us, we learn a bit of Arabic mainly in the army, and we have a very big problem of Arabic teaching in Israeli schools. Although it's supposed to be mandatory, it's not effective at all. And this is another thing that Siku is trying to change. I think it should be a much more basic, important subject matter in Israeli schools. You know, it's like math or English or literature or history. You need to, if you're in the heart of the Middle East, you need to know at least speak like a basic conversation, or to read a paper in Arabic. You know, because Arab citizens, they have no choice. They will learn Hebrew if they want to, or if they don't want to, or if their school is terrible, they will learn Hebrew. They have no choice because they want to go out and work, and they want to, you know, in Jews, it's not like this. So I think language is very, very important.
I want to add something about the language, Edan, that when it started, all this thing about the peace with the Emirates, you know, before it, I felt that the Jews hated the Arabic language. They looked at it as the language of the enemy. But then suddenly, when we saw that those peace treatments were between Israel and the Emirate and the more countries from the Arab world, then suddenly you see that even ministers and everyone is trying, and even presenters on the television, remember, on many channels, they try to speak in Arabic, even giving one or two phrases in Arabic. So this changed the attitude towards the Arabic language from looking at it as the language of the enemy, whether the Arab citizen in Israel or the Palestinian in the West Bank and Gaza, to the language of Adam. It's the language of someone who wants peace with us. So to change the attitude towards the language is the most important thing now, that the Jews will see that the Arabic is a beautiful language, and it's a language that they will need if they want to mingle, you know, in this Middle East. And we see that there are, you know, things about economy and finance and companies. I remember that Bank Leumi, for example, the head of their delegation to the Emirates is Arab from Taipei, Samer Haj Yahya. So this
he's actually the chairman. He's the chairman of the bank.
Now I think that Jews now see that, to know the Arabic language is something that is an advantage, is something that will give me more points. So I hope that this will change the attitude towards the language. Now, consider about Arabs in other domains like TV and cinema. For example, we know that there are Arab actors, for example, they participated in Fawda, Hisham Sliman, and in many also other, in the theater and in the music. Yes, there are some music projects together. And yes, it is important to see the Arabs also in these domains. And this will also have an effect on the media, because the media will have something to talk about at the theater or any other thing. They will see that there are Arabs there. So it's a win-win situation, let's say.
Yeah, I think we are seeing, I think, quite a lot of Arab.
I think we lost you, Dan.
So in reality shows, and but I think we still have a way to go there, because we still see them a lot like playing, you know, very stereotypical characters, mainly characters that have to do with the conflict or have to do with a political situation, Arab sector, or if we see them in like these reality shows, then it's a lot of folklore. You can see them, you know, talking about their area, or singing in Arabic, and sometimes it's, you know, it's very superficial, and it doesn't give a lot of room also for identity and for really more complex, you know, issues. But it's important, I think.
Yeah, I think Fawda was critiqued a lot because of the portrayal of Arabs in it, right? It's like the terrorist or the oppressed woman, or, you know, even the women that are portrayed, they're always like oppressed, they're always lack agency in these movies. And I just keep when you were talking about the video from the Ministry of Culture, was it? You know, to encourage people to go get vaccinated, and they have this.
Yeah, from Health, Ministry of Health, yeah.
Ministry of Health, yeah. And the video, you know, they thought it was funny, but in a lot of ways, it portrays like stereotypical, like mistaken, you know, image of what an Arab woman is, right? So I think it's like even at the level of the government, they still fail to understand.
You know, but the people working in the government are normal people, you know, like every Israeli citizen. And what they know about Arabs usually is what they saw in movies and what they see in the news. And if you ask most Israelis today about, you know, like, what does an Arab woman look like? They still think she's like a Muslim woman, you know, with a hijab. And now it's okay for some of them to be like this, but not all of them are like this. You know, the 20% of the population is a big society. You know, it's a diverse society. And I think the problem is that media, especially when you talk about like movies and music and reality shows, it still gives a very specific portrayal, like superficial portrayal of how Arabs look. And even when you talk about Fawda, it's not only, I think, the problem of what people, what kind of roles or who Arab actors play, all only terrorists. I think it's a bigger problem. I think the problem is that we live in such a conflict and so much militarization and war around us. And also when we open TV, our heroes are again, you know, Mr. Ravin, you know, people like acting as Arabs going after other Arabs. So I think maybe we should look for more positive cultural figures and heroes for our society and for our children. That's what, you know, is more disturbing to me.
Iman, did you want to add anything?
No, you can continue with the questions.
Okay, so I have a lot of people asking for you to include the representation index in the chat, Idan. I thought you did it, but you can try to do that again.
I'll do that, but the representation index is in Hebrew.
Okay, I mean, just put the link for people and see if they need it. Then another question related to language, but it's more technical. The question asks, why not use simultaneous translators when you're interviewing, you know, people who can't speak Hebrew?
It doesn't sound good, you know, in the media. In my Arabic show, I interview in Hebrew only when it is the Minister of Health or the Minister of Interior Affairs, because I have no other choice. But it's very hard for the listener to listen to the interview in Hebrew, and then I must also translate it to Arabic. The same on television, except when it is not live and they can put, you know, the translation later. But usually, especially on shows that there's an interaction between the people in the program, so it doesn't sound good when someone translates and then the other one is speaking in Hebrew and this one in Arabic, and you must translate this one to that one. It's complicated on live shows. It can work when it is something that's not live and they can translate it later. So that's why it's important to know the language, to know the Hebrew language fluently in order to be able to be interviewed in Hebrew media. And also, sometimes I interview Jews on my Arabic programs that speak Hebrew and that speak Arabic. So yes, and this is better. I prefer to interview someone who's a Jew and wants, and when I want to listen and my listeners, you know, get to know what the Jews think about a certain issue, it's easier for me when he says, I speak Arabic. I love it. Because then we can make the discussion and the interview in Arabic without this, okay, I must translate now the question and then the answer. This makes it, you know, a big salad for the listeners.
Thank you, Iman. The last question I have says, what do you think, what do you think is the connection between integrating Palestinian Israelis into the mainstream media and building a more vibrant Palestinian Israeli Arab media?
I think this is a very important point, because media should be media is an important part of every democracy. Okay, we need the media to put an eye for transparency and as you know, as the watchdog of governments and of decision makers. And it's not enough for us to have more Arab speakers and journalists in Hebrew media. Okay, the Arab, and we see this today with the terrible crisis with crime and murder in Arab society. Arab society needs to be represented in Hebrew media, but it also needs a very strong, vibrant, professional, local Arab media to discuss its internal matters. And I think one of the problems that brought Arab society to a very bad situation right now with what's happening with violence and crime is that it doesn't have enough strong media, enough strong local authorities and local leadership, and this is also something that has to be built and we must address also. It's not instead, you know, mainstream media is not instead of local Arab media. It has to be both. This is one of the challenges I think every minority group has.
I can add another thing to what Idan said, that we really need the Arabic media and the language, especially to talk to people on everyday issues. I just give one example. When I get calls now, this last week, asking me to make more programs and interviews about COVID-19 and the third vaccine. And someone who called me, a very important person, he said, we know that you can affect on your listeners. For example, when you talked about one place that we are giving the vaccine, in half an hour, 350 people came to get the vaccine. So he felt that people listen to the Arabic media and they can, interact, and we can affect, especially on issues having to do with the violence, for example. When we talk, when I talk to parents, when I talk to the young people, when I talk to people about getting the vaccine, so it's easier to affect through an Arabic media on the Arab society. And you can also, you put the songs, it's a whole package of songs and fun and programs and politics. So it's this way that you can affect the society rather than only in the Hebrew media.
Yes, I think the COVID example with the vaccines is a perfect example. Now we see, and also, especially that health issues, security, crime issues, it doesn't belong only, you can't say this is only the Arab sector's problem. No, these problems, they start at one point and they go everywhere, and that's why we need also, on the one hand, we need the national mainstream media, a strong media that gives space for everybody. On the other hand, we need also community, and minority group medias and minority group infrastructure that will be strong and resonate these important messages.
That's great. Thank you, guys. I think I have one last question before we conclude. I'll give you a minute after that to kind of, say some concluding remarks. So the question again I have here is for you, Idan. It says, has anti-normalization actions impacted any of your efforts?
What do you mean?
I think they mean, sometimes we see Arab artists or Arab activists or experts that are also active in the Arab world, because they speak and create maybe in Arabic, and their audience sometimes is also is in Arab countries. And first of all, the question is yes. The answer is yes. Okay, I think, and I'm sure Iman also knows this. You know, sometimes we see that in many fields. Okay, Arabs that are Israeli, they are Israeli, but also they are Palestinian, and also they are Arab. Okay, and it's a very complex identity, and it's a very complex political situation. On the one hand, they have Israeli citizenship, and they live and work and act inside Israel, but they also have other areas, okay? And if they want to publish a book also in Lebanon or in Egypt, or if they want to go and take part in a big exhibition or gallery in the Gulf, then sometimes it can be hard for them to go to Israeli mainstream media. And we have seen these things happen, and I think it's understandable. You know, it's a complex situation.
But things changed last years, because I remember that years ago, like in the Arab world, they used to look at the Arab citizens in Israel, because we have the Israeli passport, as if that we are, you know, we are Israelis, we are Jews, we are no more Arabs. They even didn't know that we have Arab schools and that we teach our children Arabic. But I think that the last years, things changed. And now in the Arab world, they got to know that we are Arabs, and we are in a very, you know, complicated situation, being an Israeli citizen and with the Palestinian roots, and being both. It doesn't have to do like you're either this or that. You can be this and that. And maybe this is a privilege, that you can see things from both sides and have a positive effect on the situation between Arabs and Jews, or Israelis and Palestinians, because we feel both. We feel here and we feel there. We are a part of Israel as a country. We are a part of the Palestinian people. And I think this can make us a very good bridge between both sides, which I really hope that we will be able to do this role, which is very hard this time. I don't see the peace process now, you know, flourishing, but I hope so. And I will be glad to be one part of this, because I can see things from both sides.
Thank you, Iman. Okay, how about we take one last question and then we'll conclude. So I have a question I'm gonna answer live. The work you both are doing is important. What can Americans do? What can Partners for Progressive Israel do to support your efforts?
Idan.
Well, you can follow us on social media. You can share our findings. We are also, I think, always happy to hear about things, similar things that are happening in other places. Like I said, we have a lot to learn from similar dynamics and power relations and exclusion happening in other places, and how other minority groups or other conflict areas are dealing with these kinds of situations. I think no place is exactly like the situation we have in Israel. You know, we live the conflict, but we're also trying to build a shared society in many fields. But I think we still have a lot to learn from other conflict areas, from other places that found a way, you know, to build shared societies and to build more equal relations and power relations. So we are always happy to hear, and thank you for following us and for coming here. It's already helping us, I think. And thanks Ron, and thanks Partners for Progressive Israel. It was really great, I think.
Man,
I would like to end with something that, you know, people outside Israel, sometimes see the news and think that we wake up in the morning every day and we start fighting. And this is not true. And Edan knows that. There are so many partnerships and friendship between Arab and Jews in this country. People that are working so beautiful together in many domains, in the academy, in the environment, in health, in education, in social affairs, in many things, in commerce. There are good and beautiful pictures and situations between Arabs and Jews. The problem is that as long as there is not a very big and, let's say a whole peace process, the situation here will always be like, one day it might become, as we saw in May, during the last 2 months, two months ago. I think that politicians should really work very hard for the peace process between Israel and the Palestinians. When this is solved, many things will be solved, ala derech, as we say, together with this. We are the most people who really want to see this peace accomplished between Israel and the Palestinians. And then many things that we are talking about will not be relevant, because all the area will be living in a peace between those two people sharing this small area. I hope so.
Okay, thank you both for joining, for being with us today. And I wanna thank the participants for joining us. I wanna hand things back to Ron for some closing remarks.
Thank you, Anwar. Thank you, Iman. Thank you, Edan. And thank you, Anwar, for being with us and being so generous with your time. Thanks to Dinesh and Julie for helping make this webinar happen. And thanks for everyone for joining us. You know, most webinars deal with some level of breaking news, as the Chiron on News always says. And today we tried to focus on something that wasn't, a major development, but really something that's fundamental. And when you see major developments, when you see breaking news, this is the kind of process upon which those breaking events are founded, what's happening day to day. So I'm really appreciative of everybody who joined us and then took time to try to explore that a little more. Thank you so much. And we hope you enjoyed it. I'm just going to do a couple of housekeeping notes. For those who missed the opening, I put in the chat two upcoming events from Partners for Progressive Israel. One is this Sunday, sessions 11 and 12 of the Israel-Palestine Symposium. If you don't get a chance to scoop it up in the chat right now, you can find more details at progressiveisrael.org. And the other is the film screening and then Q&A on regarding the film, The Ruins of Lifta, also in the chat. And I'll give you just a few seconds to scroll up and find that. So be sure to take part in those. And again, this program we've brought to you for free. If you want to learn more about upcoming program or be updated, go to progressiveisrael.org. And if you can, please make a contribution, which is what helps at the end of the day, enables us to bring these programs to you at no cost. So thank you. Thank you again to our panel. Thanks for everyone for taking part, and hope to see you next time.
Thank you very much. Thanks.
Take care.
Hey, everyone.
Shukran.
Bye.